Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdriver. On today's show, new hope for e-vapor users in Indiana. A federal judge said goodbye to an Indiana law that would have created a monopoly in the sale of e-liquid, which is the main ingredient in e-cigarettes, e-vapor products, however you want to refer to them. We've talked on this show in the past about the federal rules that are impacting the industry, but of course there are also state approaches, and the states vary differently in how they approach the issue of e-cigarettes. And Indiana had one approach that a federal judge said was completely illegal. Joining me to discuss this is Jared Meyer, research fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Jared, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Evan.
So Jared, you usually come on the show only to talk about Uber, but I guess you know about other things too, huh?
Well, I just pick all the fun things the government's trying to ruin, and e-liquid definitely falls into that category.
It's a pretty great job. I study the fun things the government tries to ruin. I like that. I really do. So, Jared, before we jump into the ruling and why a federal judge felt the need to step in what should, you know, normally just be a state's purview to regulate something like this, what was the law that was passed in Indiana? What did it do?
So most states, when they approach e-liquid or e-cigarettes, they apply a tax to them. This was the first state that put its own regulatory standards forward, and they claim to be doing so in the absence of federal action. But as most people know, the FDA has come in and pretty much effectively banned 95% or 99% of the e-liquid industry come 2 years from now. So that justification for Indiana seems less strong.
But yeah, since August, just so listeners know, federal rules have taken effect. E-liquid or e-vapor manufacturers have about 2 years to prove their products innocent. There will be legislative efforts to try to undo this rule when the budget passes at the end of the year. But for now, those federal rules are in place. So that at least that justification in Indiana seems mooted.
Yeah. And if you look at how the law in Indiana was sold back when it was passed and signed by Governor, now VP candidate Mike Pence, he talked about how it was going to make sure e-liquid companies listed their ingredients and used childproof packaging. But just like the FDA's rules were sold as a way to keep e-cigarettes out of the hands of minors, the law does a lot more than what it was billed for. And what it did was effectively create a monopoly that benefited one local firm.
And how exactly does a law regulating e-cigarettes create a monopoly? Because I think most listeners could agree that ingredients and keeping things out of the hands of children are laudable goals. But how the hell do we end up with a monopoly?
Well, what it did was required all e-liquid manufacturers to work with a state-approved security firm. And some
when we talk about security, we're not talking about like a scientific company. We're talking about like
a physical security firm. Yes. And some of the requirements make you wonder if this law was written specifically to benefit that one local firm. So we have a rolling steel fire door technician, a locksmith, an architectural hardware consultant. And keep in mind, I mean, none of these things have anything to do with e-liquid safety. I mean, rolling steel fire door technician, but all three of these people who have these government granted certifications, or at least the organizations, have to work at the security firm for over a year. So that means when the law was passed, if another security company wanted to work and partner with e-liquid companies to approve their products, they simply couldn't do so because they didn't have these people to begin with. And lo and behold, only one company in the entire United States did it, which was Mohops, which is based in Lafayette, Indiana. It happens to be where one of the supporters of the bill represents.
So funny enough, we've been trying to figure out how the hell to pronounce this word. It is M-U-L-H-A-U-P-T. I apologize to Indiana residents who know the correct pronunciation. We spent a hilarious amount of time trying to Google the pronunciation and failed. But I did come across a video from the company, and really it was advertising itself as a convenience store security firm. They were talking about how great their cameras are and the sign-in features and security. I mean, if they really wanted to make sure that e-liquid was safe, wouldn't they be passing regulations that have to do with chemistry? Is it a legitimate concern that e-vapor shops are going to get broken into by kids and things are going to be stolen? I mean, what the hell is driving this?
And this isn't even the shops. These are the manufacturers. So I guess theoretically you could maybe conjure up some idea that someone would sneak into the bat of e-liquid and drop some poison in there. But that would be maybe the only justification you could come up with. But also the e-liquid manufacturers in this bill, they do have to submit their products to independent testing agencies. One thing that's very interesting is the bill mandated that at least three independent testing agencies would be certified, but it made no such requirement for the security companies. What I think this is a simple case of lawmakers working with one company, trying to rent seek, where the company ended up getting caught rent seeking. The people who signed the bill had no idea it was doing this. They thought it was keeping it out of the hands of children and keeping people safe. They had no idea they were benefiting their local firm.
So we mentioned that a federal judge struck it down, but the law was in effect for some amount of time. And what impact did this law have on the industry before it was struck down?
Oh, it killed it. And the industry's still dead in Indiana. So only six companies were approved to work with MOHOPs. So the security company got to choose which companies to operate with, and it only picked six companies, four of which happened to be based in Indiana, and two of them never even made e-liquid before. So it seems like they knew what was going to happen and applied to work with the company early on. But what the Judge Young found when he was looking at it under the Interstate Commerce Clause was that before, over 90% of the e-liquid sold in Indiana was made out of state. Now, two-thirds of it is made in-state. That's a clear shift in the interstate market that brings in the Commerce Clause. So I think Judge Young made the correct decision here, where he said this law was purely a law built to benefit Indiana at the expense of other states.
Yeah, it was almost like a protectionist type thing, where they wanted to localize the industry, whereas really, the e-vapor industry is national. It's global. There are people selling products in New York, selling them to people in Indiana, and that was clearly changed dramatically by this law. So did he use an antitrust analysis to say that this was a monopoly? I mean, what exactly was the justification for striking it down?
The interesting thing is it wasn't struck down on the basis of monopoly. It was struck down on the effects that it had on the economy. On the overall national economy, changing the composition again from over 90% to now one-third of e-liquid brands being made outside.
And that is illegal under the Interstate Commerce Clause?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was a pretty high bar to pass. Actually, it was challenged on different levels before by groups of companies. There's other lawsuits ongoing, and this was the first one to succeed because it was very targeted on just what was going on with one company where they were shut out. So hopefully now this ruling will be expanded to the other companies, or we'll get some more positive rulings from their suits. But on the positive side, the law hasn't actually really even been enforced yet. So they first issued a 3-month delay at the end of June when the law was supposed to go into effect. At the very last minute, they just spoke to some industry groups and told them. Really no official announcement, then one finally came out. And now they haven't even begun enforcement yet, even though it's technically in effect. This is the Alcohol and Tobacco Commission deciding to punt it off and hope that maybe they can get to January 1st with the legislature's back in session and they can fix this law. Because, again, no one besides the basic architects of the law and the company itself knew what was going on. They simply got caught trying to put in place a cronyist scheme.
Yeah, and we've seen opposition to e-cigarettes from longtime anti-tobacco crusaders. We've seen it from certain people in the public health community who are genuinely worried about the effects on people. But this is a really bizarre case. I mean, you've got a company that basically does security, the kind of company you want to call when you're opening up a new 7-Eleven and you need security cameras. And this company is writing legislation about public health. I mean, is that in and of itself an illegal thing? I mean, we mentioned how just the Interstate Commerce Clause was one justification. You could see how this law could have gotten struck down many other ways.
Yeah, and I don't think it's any coincidence that the FBI is now investigating the situation that went around in creating this law. And the Indianapolis Business Journal released a very thorough investigation showing that there were definite questionable tactics used in passing this law, such as representatives from the company going and clearly lobbying and writing the bill, people who used to work for the company as a lobbyist now writing the bill. There's this whole mix, and it just reeks of corruption.
And one of the problems is that while this is a victory for vapors in Indiana, as you mentioned, the industry already suffered immeasurably. Well, probably you can measure it. I'm not going to. So it's immeasurable.
I tried to measure it, and I was unable to do any scientific level explanation, but I called every single vape shop in all of Indiana, everyone I could find, and tried to figure out when they closed or if they were going to close. The vast majority had already closed or were going to close, and a substantial amount of them moved to Michigan or moved to Ohio when they were right by the borders, because why would you even try to operate when you can only sell six brands? Again, two of which aren't even real companies, and you have to get rid of all your existing inventory.
Now, did those 90 vape shops actually get a call from the Jared Meyer, or did you make your interns do that?
Maybe I made my interns do it, but they did call every single one we could get a hold of, which was not easy, but it was very illustrative of all the damage that this law has already done. Policymakers don't realize that businesses have to plan ahead. Once this law came out, the vape shops tried to fight it. They tried to raise public awareness, and it didn't really catch on until about a month before it went into effect. And, you know, I started writing about it for national outlets. We had a bunch of Indiana papers writing on it, and they had to punt and stop enforcement. But the damage was done. So when policymakers regulate or pass these new laws, they have to keep in mind there are major consequences that are going to happen, even if you say, oops, let us do it over.
Yeah, and even if a vape shop owner, let's say he's a lawyer and he knows that this is going to get struck down, that doesn't matter. Like you said, and I've talked to folks in the e-vapor industry, businesses have to make irreversible decisions based on the climate. And when there is uncertainty, it doesn't matter if the law is on their side, because you can't just wait for the judge to strike it down. You don't know what's going to happen. And even now, you know, we can say that this is a victory, but like you said, in January, the legislature is going to reconvene, and then who knows what's going to happen then. So if you closed up shop, just this ruling might not be a reason to open up shop again. And we're seeing the same dynamic play out in the federal government. And I talked about the federal rules on previous episodes, so I won't get into too much detail. But essentially, they took effect in August. Like we discussed, there's a 2-year shot clock for businesses to file very costly applications for approval. And this would affect all 50 states, forget Indiana. And unfortunately, as there is a lawsuit that Tech Freedom filed an amicus in, so there's uncertainty around the law, there's the fact that there's an amendment, the Cole Bishop Amendment, floating around Congress that is hopefully going to get signed into law. If you're a vapor manufacturer, you need that. But until then, you are now operating under the assumption that I have to file applications that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for approval from the FDA.
And every time you make any change in your product, you've got to do it again.
Yeah, right? And you are going to make decisions now. You're going to make decisions before the budget passes. You can't sit around and wait for policymakers to fix this. So, you know, proponents of regulation might say, well, this is a great story of a stupid thing being done, but then they fixed it. Fantastic. But the problem is the damage is done. And what are you going to say to these small businesses? And most of them are small businesses. We're not talking about giant vapor manufacturers. This industry has been driven by small business owners, from shop owners, from creative people, from entrepreneurs. What are you going to say to them? Oh, at least we got it right the second time. At least we got it right the third time. They've already probably moved on to a different product. They might have changed careers already. What government does, even in the short term, can be catastrophic.
Yeah, and I mean, as upset as I am about the law, I'm glad that the Democrat running for governor right now has actually made this a campaign issue, where he said, we're not going to create monopolies in Indiana. And even one of the main sponsors of the law said, look, I know how this looks. It wasn't supposed to be this way. We'll revisit it.
So how does that happen, though? I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, these people are writing laws and then being like, oh, I didn't know this was going to happen.
That's what happens. You get industry in to write the law for them. And I think the case in this was that Mohawk's just got exactly what he wanted. It was so obvious the law was written to benefit them. So I think we'll get this overturned by the legislature, even if this somehow doesn't continue to work through the courts and gets entirely invalidated. But what I'm worried about is Indiana's going to go the way of many other states and add an excise tax to e-liquid, which, as we know, if you're putting excise taxes on cigarettes, there's some argument there because people, it's a public health risk, or maybe you want to deter it, even though the evidence shows it doesn't actually deter smoking. But when you go to e-cigarettes, which are clearly, I mean, even if they have some danger, the best research has shown they're about 95% safer than traditional combustible cigarettes. You're not lighting tobacco on fire and inhaling it. So why are we making it more expensive for people to make a healthy choice? And that's where I think Indiana is going to go next after this.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of states attempt to draw revenue from, and if we think about what's the point of an excise tax on vices like gambling, like the lottery, it's to discourage what we as a society have somehow determined bad behavior. And a lot of times it's not really society, it's just a handful of special interests that have determined it's bad behavior. But really, if you're talking about public health and you're talking about the cost to the healthcare system of uninsured lung cancer patients, I mean, you should not be discouraging the safer alternative. You should be encouraging it, and you don't even have to do anything proactive. You just have to stay out of the way. This industry flourished for over 10 years because of a lack of regulation. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be regulated, right? These products have batteries. Batteries are dangerous. They need to be handled properly. These products have liquid in them. The thing about listing the ingredients, I don't think anyone has a problem with that. But it seems like the regulations are not based on public health. It's other stuff.
Yeah, driving our public health debate right now is not harm reduction. Instead, it's this almost zealot ideal to just stop orally inhaled nicotine.
Well, I liken it to abstinence-only education in sex ed, right? Because we've talked about, or not on this show, this is a tech policy show. I mean, people are aware of some of the problems with abstinence-only education. You go into a room full of teenagers and you tell them, don't do something. First, that's a great way to ensure that they're going to do it. But secondly, you tell them it's never okay and there's no safe way of doing it. If you don't tell them about condoms, if you don't tell them about birth control, you're going to end up with some problems, as the argument goes. Well, here we've got the just say no crowd. We've got the tobacco's bad, e-vapor's bad, smokeless tobacco's bad, everything's terrible, don't ever try anything, that'll work. And instead, now people are unaware of a safe alternative. There are people who are confused and don't realize that
some
it's 95%.
Some people think it's more dangerous than cigarettes, which is clearly not true.
There is a gulf between the science and public perception, and that is partially because lawmakers don't have a clue. And we look to government to tell us what products are safe. That's the point of having an FDA. That's the point of having the Alcohol Tobacco Commission in Indiana. But if they're confused and they're sending mixed messages, I'm not going to realize that I have safer alternatives. And maybe if I'm a teenager, I'm just going to smoke because it's cool and no one told me I could have done something else.
Yeah, and it will actually, with the effects of this law, it's easier to get your hands on cigarettes than e-liquid. And it's going to be on states that are taxing it, like Pennsylvania, how they tried to put in that 40% wholesale tax, which now might get delayed. I mean, you're making e-liquid more expensive than cigarettes. Not only is it hard enough to quit to begin with, but now you have to pay more, and agencies like the FDA want to limit your options. So I think just the idea of how we're approaching tobacco harm reduction in the United States is completely flawed, especially when you look at countries like the United Kingdom that are encouraging it as a way for smokers to get off cigarettes. Not a thing for teenagers to start doing, but for something for when people are, you know, taking a 50% chance that they're going to die from their cigarette habit, anything you can do that will reduce harm and is an attractive option for them, that's what we should be encouraging, or at least not stopping.
Yeah, in the UK, it's important that you bring up that example, because the 95% safer number that comes from research done by both the Royal College of Sciences and Public Health England, not exactly industry trade groups. So, you know, we haven't really done the research in the United States, but we should look to our cousins across the pond for guidance, because they're taking a much more sensible approach. And it looks like because there is now a massive federal regulation on the books, states' role in this debate is going to be about time and place, you know, whether you can use an e-cigarette inside of a bar. It's going to be about taxes. But probably, would you agree that Indiana's attempt at creating a monopoly, I mean, protecting public health, is the last we'll see of health regulations on e-cigarettes at the state level, because the FDA's rules are so massive?
Yes, I would agree with that. And that's why I think the pivot on the state level is going to go towards excise taxes rather than trying to regulate an entire industry out of business except for six select companies and your favorite security company.
Well, as I mentioned, the e-vapor manufacturer Nicopure Labs, they have filed a lawsuit against the FDA. Tech Freedom filed an amicus in that lawsuit. We'll be tracking that. There's also legislative efforts in the Agricultural Committee and in the general budget to pass what is the Cole Bishop Amendment, which would change the predicate date, which would effectively undo the worst of the FDA's rules. So we'll be tracking all of these issues. Jared, thanks so much for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Evan.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Send us an email at media at techfreedom.org. Feel free to pitch topics and guests. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review, because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.